This episode is brought to you by Bento Box, a platform that connects restaurants with people. Learn more at getbento.com/openingsoon. That is getbento.com/openingsoon. Hi, this is Jenny Goodman.
And I'm Alex McCreary.
And we are the hosts of Opening Soon on Heritage Radio Network. We listen to HRN and are actually guests on several shows before bringing our own show to this network. And it's been so amazing to see and hear the unparalleled content that comes from our community, even with limited financial resources. HRN's been making food radio for 10 years. HRN staff and hosts make it look really easy, but making the best food radio out there is actually really hard work.
We're super excited to be a part of Heritage Radio Network, and we invite you to join us in making sure that in our second decade, HRN is stronger than ever. So become a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate right now. You can even show your support by selecting Opening Soon in the designation drop-down menu. Thanks for listening to HRN.
Welcome to Opening Soon on Heritage Radio Network. We're your hosts. I am Jenny Goodman.
And I'm Alex McCreary.
And if you're just joining us for our first season, Opening Soon is a show all about opening restaurants. And we're here with some of the best chefs and restaurateurs and industry leaders chatting about how to take your idea to opening soon.
Yeah, and if you know anything about our story or why we're here, if you've listened to any of our episodes before, you'll know that we're not very good restaurateurs. We're actually pretty crappy ones. But we're really good at making workwear, and through that, we've met a lot of great people that have started restaurants. We've seen people build them up from a hollowed-out space to in a white box to, you know, a room filled with people enjoying a nice dinner. So we've been able and lucky enough to see people go through the process and learn a lot. And the point of this podcast and the show is to be able to share their knowledge with all of you out there that are thinking about doing this on your own.
Yeah, and actually our guests today are people that we've met through our business, Till It. So we actually even have an apron named after one of the chefs who's in the booth with us today, which is Steven Satterfield from Miller Union in Atlanta, Georgia. And then we're also lucky to have John and Jill from Tail Up Goat in Washington, D.C., who we've also met through Till It. So exciting stuff. But before we jump into the interview with all of them about team and culture, we're going to wrap up some key takeaways from last week.
Yeah, and so again, a special thanks to Missy Robbins last week for coming on and chatting about design and build out of her spaces, Lilia and Missy in Brooklyn. And number one that we got from her was to work the aesthetic of the space that you take into the parameters of your building. So using some of those key details that might seem a little weird or awkward, or but kind of highlighting those and taking them out, whether it be exposed beams or concrete floors or things like that.
Another interesting point that she had was about bringing your designer with you when you're actually looking at spaces, which Jill's nodding her head like, yes, I've done this before. So Missy, you know, said that she took her designer with her to look at like some of the final spaces so that they could point out things that weren't maybe right or would cause them problems in the long run. And that was super helpful.
And number three was kind of all about space. So it's, you know, thinking about every component that you're going to need, whether it be a changing room for your employees to space for your wine, and to kind of do the best you can to map that out and see how that feels. Because when you're looking at a 6x10 spot on a piece of paper, it sounds really big. But then when you see it in the flesh,
60
it might not
feet,
be quite not, as big as you might have thought. So,
yeah. And the other thing that I thought was interesting is she's like, no matter what, you fucking make it work. So that's always true too. The other thing that we talked about is budget, and when you have to make cuts, do it in a way that doesn't sacrifice your vision, but lean on your experts to say where you can swap materials that will keep things, you know, like budget friendly, but still within your own vision.
Yeah. And the last one was that things will change. Design may change some of the components of your space, you know, whether it be light fixtures or where a plug is placed might change. But as long as you stick to your vision and kind of roll with it and keep it all tied in, then you're going to be fine.
So after our key takeaways, thank you, Missy, for those. We're going to talk today about something super important to our business, to every business, and particularly in the restaurant industry, which is team and culture. So this week is all about how to hire and train the best of the best and how to keep them from jumping ship amidst the chaos of opening and trying to retain them for as long as you can. And then once you have a team in place, what do you do to instill and maintain a culture, and how do you keep your employees happy and thriving?
Yeah, and again, we are joined with Stephen Satterfield, who's the award-winning executive chef of Miller Union in Atlanta, Georgia. And Stephen's Southern Cuisine focuses on seasonal and local produce, and they've been open since 2009, so we're coming up on a 10-year mark this year, which is really, really exciting and impressive. And obviously, the restaurants received various honors, including Eater, Bon Appetit, Food and Wine, Esquire, and James Beard as well. We're also joined with John Seibert and Jill Tyler from Tail Up Goat. Jill is a partner and service director, and John is the executive chef and partner as well. And they're based in Washington, D.C., and they're a heavy Mediterranean influence, fresh and local as well. We were even talking about how you only do full animals now, full animal program, which is really exciting and sounds like a lot of work.
But they apparently have an amazing butcher. Yeah,
an amazing butcher, and they also have a Michelin star as of 2018, which is pretty impressive. Congrats.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys, for being here.
No, thank you for having
Thanks for having us.
We're super excited to have you all. Let's jump in with you, Stephen, because you're coming up, as Alex mentioned, on 10 years, which is like, congratulations, holy shit, that's a huge milestone.
It's a milestone. It is.
But yeah, so tell us, you know, because we're talking about opening and then a lot of people aspire to have 10-year-old restaurants. What did your team look like when you opened, and what does it look like today?
They looked like deer in headlights. They were terrified. As was I. No, I mean, you know, opening a restaurant, your first restaurant, is a major thing in your head, you know? And so getting out of your head and actualizing what you want to happen is really important. Communicating what your intentions are, what your expectations are extremely important. And getting everybody on, like, that Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you have to really repeat yourself a lot to the point of you sound like someone's pulling a string behind you and it's just coming out. But it's important. You're the one with the vision.
Yeah.
If you're the restaurant owner or the chef or both, you're the one with the vision, and you have to communicate that vision clearly to the guest, to the employee, to everybody. And so we've stuck by our guns, and we've always said and done what we set out to do, and that is to serve seasonal menu that changes with the seasons, to have a green restaurant that composts and recycles, and a culture that's nourishing and happy. And that's, you know, we're going to spend more time there than we do at home.
Yeah.
So we might as well make it a family place and make it really, you know, we know every single employee. We know a lot about them. I'm the on-staff counselor.
I know. It's like, Stephen, who does HR, when we were talking before? And you're like, that would be me. Yeah.
Depending on which department. But yeah. And so it's, you know, I think now we have a very well-established team. At that time, you know, in an opening of a restaurant, you do tend to go through some people until you find the right match. It's kind of like speed dating.
It's dating, right.
Yeah. And certain people make the cut and make it work, and other people don't get it or don't want to, and then you just move on to the right team. And it's
a change for people coming in that had been in other restaurants that had a very different team culture, and then coming to your place where you're nurturing and a little bit more caring, a little bit more a different way of teaching?
Well, I mean, I will just say this. I'm firm when I need to be, because it's important to set boundaries.
Right. So you're really a dick behind the... It gives us the impression of being really nice
great
guy.
Hugs.
But, you know, I think more than anything, it's really just about getting that right ensemble. You know, it's kind of like... It's like playing music, which I used to be in a band. And it's like, you know, unless everybody's jamming together, it's not going to come out right. And so you really have to have that, you know, that right fit where everyone's in concert together, and there's a lot of, you know, you can tell when it's working.
Right.
And when it's not working, it's usually one person's dragging everybody down.
Right.
You know?
And so you guys, I'm looking at John and Jill, you know, you've have your 3.5 years in Tail of Goat. And it was interesting because I was like, John and Jill are opening a second place, hopefully in November. It's, yeah, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
And it was funny because Jill said to me, well, I'm opening a second restaurant to keep some of my employees. So tell me a little bit about that and how you like grow and try to foster people.
We're just really lucky with so much of our staff, some who have been with us since the beginning. And I think what we realized is we have to kind of continue to grow both ourselves, which will be kind of a new challenge because we'll be in slightly different roles, so that we can create space for people to kind of move up with us who have been with us a while. So there are only so many, you know, manager positions in our restaurant. Bill, John, and I are all in kind of some of those. So once we get this new project open, we'll be opening up, you know, new roles at the new restaurant, but also roles within the restaurant at Tail Up Goat. So we'll be able to move people up and kind of grow with our staff.
Yeah, I think finding new and fun ways to challenge people, to keep them interested and, you know, focused on the task at hand is one of the hardest things of owning, you know, parts of owning a restaurant. And I think, you know, with a new place, we're hoping to, you know, continue to find ways to challenge not just ourselves, but, you know, the people that have gotten us to where we are, because we could do nothing without them.
Right. Sometimes I feel like the best employees are the ones that are pushing themselves to learn as much as possible. And, you know, often the thought of, at least of a young cook, is that that means working at 10 of the best restaurants for 6 months at a time. So how do you sort of change their mind and say, you can learn more and you can grow more by staying with us for 1, 2, 5, 10 years?
I think, you know, we at Tilico, we have so many different aspects of what we do. You know, you mentioned the whole animal butchery, which is a big deal. We make all our own pastas and breads, and, you know, we really try to do everything from the ground up. So there's always room to learn. You know, I haven't mastered everything yet, and I can't say that I think anybody on my staff has. So there's always, you know, a new room to walk into and find a new, you know, component of food and cooking to try to master. I think that, you know, like we were just talking about, finding, kind of helping guide people to new roles that are right, of interest to them, is a really important part of it. You know, I've definitely had conversations with people on staff that have ended with, maybe you should move on, just because I know that what you are craving in your next challenge isn't maybe something that I can provide. But I think that there are so many different aspects of cooking and, you know, food that it's, no one on earth has ever mastered all of it. So
right,
as long as we're moving people around enough. And
I've had that same conversation of, you know, when you can tell when someone has their, it's honestly more of their mindset. Like, yeah, if they're willing to learn, there's always something to learn.
Yeah, totally.
You know, if you feel like you've learned everything in the kitchen, but you still want to learn about the restaurant business, then you can learn about how to run the books or how to host the door,
yeah,
or how to wash dishes in the most efficient way.
Have you had, like, people honestly, take you up on those things? Have you
Well, that's what I did. And before I owned Miller Union, I worked at Watershed for almost 9 years under Scott Peacock. Right. And when I felt like I had hit a wall where I stopped learning, I would force myself to learn a different part of the business. And so I would, on my day off, I'd come in and host and to see what that was all about. And I would...
Were you a good host?
I think you would be a good host. I was overly friendly, and I probably sat people too soon.
Yeah. And the kitchen was like, fuck you, like, Steven.
No one went to the right table.
And I, you know, I bar backed one night. Yeah. I worked with the owner in the office a couple times, just like to see all the other parts. And I think but at that point, I knew I wanted to open a restaurant.
Right.
And I was like, I might as well learn from them if they're willing to teach me. And they knew I wanted to open a restaurant too. And they were very supportive of me moving on and happy to show me things that they felt comfortable showing me. And it was a great experience to actually ask for it. And yeah, I think that's sometimes you have to ask for what you want.
No one's going to offer you.
Yeah. And that's for like ownership, employees, everything. Like, right, always ask for what you want and what you need.
You have to be clear.
Yeah.
I mean, just as much as a chef or an owner has to be clear about their expectations, the employee needs to be clear about what they're trying to get out of this experience too, because it is a two-way street. And yes, we hired you to do a job, but you're there to learn. And no kitchen is not a learning kitchen. And if it isn't, there's something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, and the other, you know, back to your point too, John, about like we've had conversations that are like, maybe it's just better if we parted ways. And that's like, that's also something that I think is a really hard thing to do.
Hard conversation.
It's a hard conversation.
It's a hard conversation to be, you know, from an owner perspective, to be honest. You know, it's not necessarily the best thing for the business for me to tell somebody like, hey, you're doing great here, but
it is.
It's probably better for you if you move on.
Right.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just not a fit. And I think somebody once told me, you know, like a CEO once told me, like, the nicest thing to do for somebody who's not a fit is to let them go so they can find their fit, because you're actually being like unkind by keeping somebody in a position that doesn't work for them. So I think that goes
even
to,
if
like,
they're a fit, but they've kind of grown past what they're you know, wanting to put in your restaurant, and understanding that it's time to grow or grow somewhere else.
Right.
That's got to be really hard as an owner, as the chef in the kitchen, who now has to hire someone else and put them through training and hope that they fit the rest of the team.
The hardest part of owning a restaurant is training people.
The most challenging
part. Oh, and I've learned how to say goodbye. I mean, I had a hard time at first, you know.
Quick and easy, Jerry Maguire style. Like, today's the last day, goodbye.
You know, it's like a lot of the employees you get really close with, and it's sad to see them go, but it's awesome to see them go on to do something different or new or fresh or move to another city. But eventually, like, I know everybody's going to leave. I know that the last people standing there are going to be Neil and myself.
Right, you and your business
because
partner.
Because we'll do anything we can to keep it afloat, but we're gonna say goodbye to every single person there.
Right.
That's a really tough reality, and it's, I mean, but it's true. But
way
it's
to bring
Jill's holding her heart.
I know, but Jill's crying. Jill's silent because she's choking back tears.
I've just never thought about it that way, and it's totally, it's absolutely apt.
It's true. Basically, Stephen just told us everybody's going to die, and everybody will leave your restaurant or your business at some point.
It's like that Flaming Lips song, Do You Realize?
Yeah, it's so true. But the thing is, I guess, how do you, like, treat people? How do you, like, make sure people have your vision while they are with you? And because you talked a lot about vision, and we talked a little, and you said training is like what takes the most time. So, you know, while people are with you, you want to treat them like family and, like, you know, more or like employees who, you know, you grow. But what do you do to instill vision in training?
Expectations. Setting expectations, figuring out what your expectations are to begin with, and really knowing what your goal is, I mean, you have to start with you.
Yeah.
And knowing what you want your business to exude and what experience you want your employees and your guests to have. And really understanding
kinda,
that.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Do you guys do any kind of like team building activities to kind of foster a relationship aside from, you know, traditional training and those kind of things?
So I think we do a couple different things. I think one thing we do that's really different is when we were starting to think about opening this place, one of the things we kind of wanted to try to address was the disparity between front of house and back of house wages. So one of the things we do that I think has been really successful is all of our cooks work 4 days a week in the kitchen, and then they work 1 day a week in the front of the house, and they're paid their full kitchen hourly, but they're a full member of the tip pool. So they're a back waiter that day. And I think that that has just really created a really great relationship between the front of house and back of house. Everyone has a better understanding of what's going on. And it's also a way we found to kind of like bump up everyone's paycheck. So that's like one of the things we did.
Not to mention though, that the connection to the guest is so rare between back of house and the guest. So that to have that bridge, that gap makes people seem more real. And then you feel like you relate to them and you want to cook
for those
people.
I think for cooks, in particular, you know, getting to, you know, you toil away for hours and hours and you rarely get to see the end result, which is not the plate, it's the guest reaction to it. And for them to have that experience of, you know, working their butts off in the morning and afternoon and night, and then seeing, you know, somebody smile and be happy and maybe have their day changed, you know, because of their hard work and efforts is completely, you know, it's just invaluable, I think, for a cook.
I have a running joke because my team does not get the privilege to get with the guest and clear their plate or whatever. But I always tell them about the smile count. I'm like, smile count's through the roof tonight, guys. Like, everybody's smiling out there.
Does that include
a good
yours? Because I feel like it would be over.
I may have missed this, but does the front of house spend a day in the back?
They do not, unfortunately. The kitchen is so small. We've had a couple people who have gone back to learn a specific thing. One of our bartenders wanted to figure out how Huntley did the porgy that we serve sometimes, and all the bones are out. So he's like, my family and I catch porgy, and I want to know how to do that. So he came back and spent a day with Huntley learning how to do that. And then we've had some successful and unsuccessful pickling parties. Well, we had a pickling party when we first opened.
What was unsuccessful about
it? So ramps. Oh. It was Can Jam.
This is completely my fault, by the way.
We told everyone Can Jam 2016, come in, we'll do all this canning, it'll be great, you'll learn some stuff, and then we'll have pizza and beer.
And then everybody showed up and I had 100 pounds of dirty ramps for them to clean. And that
oh
was
my
it.
God. And they were
this is not fun. This isn't fun.
Yeah, that was a never again. Welcome we learned from that one.
This is the hardest work we've done. I thought this was fun.
Dirty ramps, not fun.
So, note to self, not a good team building activity.
It depends on what the soundtrack is. Yeah. Yeah.
We actually had a really fun, for after holidays, we did a staff party this year, and we did a white elephant gift exchange. And we bought all the gifts, so they didn't have to bring gifts. But it was actually really...
Is that the one where you steal each other's gifts?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so there was a big pile of presents.
Some
Everyone picked a number.
Some people call it Dirty Santa.
Whoa. It was really, really fun. And everyone, it was just a really fun thing that was surprising how much fun everyone had with it. And the stealing and the whole team was really into it. Got competitive.
Competitive.
I'm sure.
Steven, do you guys do any sort of team building activities outside or? Outside
I think when you hit your 10th year, you don't really want to hang out with anybody from work. Sorry, guys. We spend a lot of time together. But, I know that some of the team gets together socially. We're closed on Sundays. And that's the day for, the folks from the workplace that want to hang out together can.
Right.
And I know Neil, my business partner, and he's the general manager, the wine director, the plumber, the bookkeeper, the light bulb changer. He is hosting a party at his house on June 23rd. And I'll read out the address so everybody listening can go. Yeah.
Go to Neil's house on June 23rd if you're in Atlanta,
And
Georgia.
He invited the entire staff to come, plus all of his friends or whatever. And he's just going to raid the cellar. And
how big is your team now?
Our team is 48. That's 48 big, people.
Yeah. And how many? And you have 160 seats.
140
seats.
Depends on the weather, because it's patio or not patio.
And Jill and John, you guys have how many?
We have 66 seats in the dining room and then another 16 at the bar.
And you guys have how many employees?
53.
Yeah, so these are not small staffs. So
Steven's more efficient than us, that's right.
Well, 10 years, so.
And takes time. Takes time, John. Tell us about some of the... you guys have employee handbooks, packets, things like that that you use. Are there some things to keep them trained and complying with sexual harassment issues and things like that?
We have a full-on employee handbook that everybody gets as they walk in. Pretty basic, straightforward stuff.
Yeah, it kind of goes over all the rules about working at Tail Up Goat, all the big federal things you want to make sure people understand, and then kind of has some of our more how we handle allergies, how we it's kind of pretty all-encompassing, both from don't bring drugs to work, this is appropriate behavior, this is not appropriate behavior, and then things personal to the restaurant too. So that gets emailed to everyone. We have all the new hire stuff, and that's something that gets sent to them. Or they can have a hard copy, too, and we get a signed copy back.
And by the way, if you do have an employee handbook, for those people who are listening, you are supposed to have legal review for your state compliance.
Yes.
FYI.
And we did. Yes. Yeah. We kind of overhauled it this year with a lawyer.
Yeah. It's build it into your business plan because it gets expensive. But another thing to talk about is those employment lawyers technically should review your employee handbook.
And it's definitely worth doing. It was a commitment of funds to redo it.
Yeah.
But it just seemed the best thing to do. Yeah. And it's just a really good idea to have and make sure everyone's kind of on the same page. Yes. Yeah.
And Steven, you said you don't have an employee handbook technically.
It's still in the 11th draft.
It's going to be the biggest employee handbook ever.
It's something that we build into our training. So we just really instill our values in the training sessions. But yes, it's something we're working on.
It's okay not to have one too. It's not a requirement. But it's just interesting to hear the different, what people do and don't do. I think we're going to take a super quick break to hear from our friends at Bento Box, and then we'll come back with some more interview. In the Garden District neighborhood of New Orleans, co-chefs and real-life partners Kristen and Michael serve contemporary Southern cuisine in a historic two-story building. The restaurant was built in the late 1880s and has been a grocery store and an auto parts store that contributes to its vintage look and feel. Michael took over the space in 2008 and opened Coquette. Coquette is celebrated for its vibrant menu, historically elegant interior, and Southern hospitality. Bento Box helped them build an online image and beautiful new website that highlights their award-winning team and displays open employment opportunities for people who want to add to its rich history. Coquette is one of 4,000 restaurants that's powered by Bento. Visit getbento.com/opening soon to learn more.
All right, welcome back. Again, we're joined with Jill Tyler and John Seibert of Tail Up Goat and Stephen Satterfield of Miller Union. A couple wrap-ups from the first half is that key points that I thought were really interesting is that Stephen said that your team is kind of like a band and being in harmony is really important.
Oh, that was a good quote, Stephen. I didn't even catch that.
Sneaky like that. Number two is that for the cooks and the front of house, whoever's in the learning position of being an employee, that there's always something new to learn. And I thought it was really interesting as well that Stephen had gone sort of beyond and said, look, I'm planning to open a restaurant. Can I peek in on the books? Can I peek in on how to be a hostess and a bartender and all those different things? And again, that's not something that's going to be handed to you or just offered to you. That's something that you need to approach your owners and your bosses and say, can I do this? And I would imagine that most people would be willing to let you come in and do that. No, unless you're kind of a real knucklehead, then you might be like, you're not there yet, buddy. Number three is that I thought, John said that it was really interesting is, aside from them letting their cooks kind of get in the front, but that they were able to see the end product, which from a cook's mind is often the plate. It's the plate of food that goes out, and that's not really the end product. The end product is how the guest perceives it and how that they're affected by it. I thought that was really, really neat.
Do you guys have an open kitchen? No.
Yeah. It's fairly open. It's not, U-shape in the middle of the restaurant bar style or anything, but you can see in. You can see me.
You can see
everybody else back there. Hopefully smiling.
Yeah.
And ours is there's an opening to the dining room. So it's basically if you're on your way to the restroom, you can see straight in the kitchen.
Right.
The best part is when people are walking out of the restroom and they're on their phone texting and they walk right into the kitchen.
Into the kitchen. You're like,
and they're like standing by me. I'm like, hi.
Can you take this to table 9, please?
I need a runner.
Hands. No, I love that.
We talked a lot about obviously what kind of person you're looking for, but let's go before that. How do you find new people? Do you use these new services that are amazing, like Culinary Agents, or are you on Craigslist? Are you asking your cooks for their friends' names?
It's pretty much everybody is friends of friends. I think, the hardest part, why we're all talking about this is finding good people and how you keep them and all that. And I think once you do, they tend to breed other great people. And I would say 99% of our hires are, a friend of a current employee that needs a new position and
that's great.
Comes to us through that.
That is the best way. I mean, that's a testament.
And keeping it in the family.
And John was actually, you were saying before while we were having lunch that you actually had another chef refer people to you because they were losing one of their good employees due to a scheduling conflict.
And that's like, in that particular case, it was a gentleman I've mentioned a couple of times, Huntley. And it was the,
they love you,
it's
Huntley.
The biggest, we love him so much. And his daughter, Wynn, and his wife, Ashley.
Where's Huntley?
Yeah, it was one of the biggest compliments I've ever, received as in my professional life was this gentleman, Peter in DC, who I just respect so much. And he thought enough of me to send somebody that I know he loved and cared about my way was just a very special moment for me.
I just had a very similar thing happen. A restaurant in Atlanta closed, and the owner emailed me, and he said this guy was their best cook, and I know he's looking for a place if you're hiring. And I emailed him immediately because we're always looking for people, you know. And I think he started with us yesterday.
Oh, really?
So his first day was yesterday. I was cooking at the Beard House, so I wasn't there to greet them. But it's funny, when people come in the kitchen, I personally give them a tour if I'm there. And I always start at the dish pit and how to treat the dishwasher. How to separate your trash and like all the things that we care about. That's like the first thing I always tell people.
When I cooked in your restaurant with you, that was the first 15 minutes of my day there. Teaching me how to use your trash.
Were you stodging or you like came to do like an event?
No, we were doing a dinner together. Uh-huh. And I was going to be prepping some stuff in his kitchen.
And he was like,
I got a full on tutorial on where the compost was. Uh-huh. And then he melted some paper cups for me so that I could see that they were very compostable.
so go see Steven to learn tips about composting.
And it's funny, I also tend to rely more on the friend of friend network for cooks, but you know, sometimes you can't, you tap out on their friends.
Right.
But recently we've had a big turnover in the dishwasher area of the restaurant, and that's a really important job. And I was telling somebody last night, I've been tempted to make it the most highly paid position in the restaurant just because I want it to be desirable. Like it's hard to get good people that are willing to do that job. We're busy and it's a messy job, you know, and it's a long, long hours. And
what about the cycle in the same way that you guys do the front of house, back of house? One of the first restaurants I worked in St. John was you had to do a day as a dishwasher and 4 days as a cook. And it, aside from, you know, building team unity, you really learned what that person was going through. And as a cook, you had a whole lot more respect for the dishwasher.
And you might not dirty five things.
Yeah,
you
just
know
throw stuff in there when you go in. Or, yeah.
Right. You're more respectful of like, you know.
I don't know.
Well, there was one day where...
That doesn't happen in our house, though. It's like, I'm the dishwasher and Alex is the cook and he uses every fucking pot in the house. And I'm like, you're killing me.
I know. Ben's always trying to tell me not to cook at home. But there was one day where AM dishwasher... called out, his wife is in the hospital or something. There was nobody that was available to come in. And I went in and washed dishes for lunch. And I was like, God damn it, did you have to use that twice? Like, I just washed that.
But this is, I mean, and that's also about being a business owner. It's like you mentioned, Neil, your business partner's changing light bulbs, you're washing dishes. I mean, that's like,
it's a glamorous life.
But it's true. Yeah. I mean, we're like scrubbing the toilets in our office sometimes because the, you know,
it's not all running not around a whole, filming podcasts. Yeah.
And you can't ask anyone to do something you wouldn't do.
Exactly. That's
like,
a
that's
huge
just not
thing
okay
for culture.
You know, and so it's really important to step in those moments and sometimes really gross moments, you know, something really gross has to get cleaned up.
And those
I only feel good cleaning
make
it up.
Your staff appreciate you more and work harder for you, seeing that you're there willing to get dirty and do those things, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, but and the thing is, you can ask people to do things you wouldn't do, but that's not a good
example.
And I've worked for people in the past that have done, you know, that would not make the sacrifices that we make as business owners, and they expect everybody to do the dirty work. And I think it's important to get your hands dirty and show them that you're willing to do that work too. But that's the most motivating thing you can do, is to show them you're willing to work just as hard, if not harder.
Right.
Anything you want
to? Cool. Should we move on to lightning round?
Yeah. We like to do a little fun, little one word answer round, still based on team and culture and all these kind of things and a little bit about just ownership. So we'll jump right in.
Okay, one word that describes how you feel about being your own boss. Steven, we'll start with you.
Bossy.
Bossy.
Bossy. All right.
Whoa.
John, Jill? Oh,
proud.
That's a new one. I haven't heard that.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. I was going to say the same thing.
Aww. Now you know why they're partners in life and in the business.
You don't have to say something.
And occasionally overwhelmed, if we're going to be honest.
Overwhelmed. Yes. Panicked. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This will be, for Steven, longest running team member.
Vince Landy, the bartender.
And
he's been there since day one.
Since day one.
And we had a dishwasher that was with us for 9 years.
Okay. Wow.
Enrique. He moved back to Mexico. But he was with us since day two. because on day one, he didn't see the restaurant because there was no sign, and he kept riding past it.
He went all the way to the end of the line. He ping-ponged trying to find the job. Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. You did the dishes on the first day.
I did.
Oh, there you go. You're like, I'm trying to cook. And so
I'm going to become a professional. I want to be the James Beard Award winning dishwasher.
There should be a category for that.
I would actually like to nominate myself for that. So.
That is hilarious. And you said you have several employees who had been with you for 9 years or so.
Yeah. And our pastry chef is 8. Our dining room manager is 8. One of our servers is 8 years, all this month.
That's amazing. And you guys are 3.5-year-old restaurant.
Yeah, we're 3.5. Tara, who's like my right hand, has been with us since day one. She came on as a server and quickly got promoted to a manager. And then Dan, one of our bartenders, has been on since like week 2. I think he like started training when we opened, and then we had some staff that was like training in our apartment, something I'm also excited not to have to do again.
Training in your apartment? Mm-hmm. Our first employees literally were, we had 5 employees who worked in our apartment for a year before we got our first office.
Talk about a hiring challenge.
For Tillit.
Yeah, I remember that.
You came over?
I came on the early years.
Yeah, like, Stephen's OG. He's like, why are they making aprons in their house in New York City? That's weird. Yeah. Cool. So this is what I found, when just a little quote here. You are a world-renowned traveling speaker on the power of creating a great team culture. Give us your one-line motivational quote.
It's a lot of sighs and gasps over here.
I don't know if it's motivational, but it's always the thing I think about when hiring and when trying to figure out what the right step is, or the next step, or who to pick and who to hire. It's just like kind and smart, right? Those are qualities you cannot teach to anyone. Those are like inherent parts of someone's being. And I think if you start there, you just have like such a great roadmap for moving forward. Anything is teachable past that, but kindness, you know, is just who someone is.
Be nice.
Be nice.
Be nice. That's a good one. I was going to say, do it with passion and do it because you care.
Yeah.
If you don't care, I don't really want you to be part of the team.
You'll never be a good employee.
You're never being a good employee.
Yeah, you have to have passion and you have to care about what you're doing. And if you do, then it will naturally evolve into a great place.
Yeah. And that's like one of the other things that, you know, people said to me when I was in business school was like, you want employees who care about your business almost as much as like you do. And those are the people. So it's like showing that you care. And those people will go on. It's the hardest thing to find. It's like,
I didn't say it was easy. Yeah.
But also those are the people who get opportunities and end up being their own great leaders, you know?
Right.
I think for us, it's been one of the reasons, like, I am the one who kept trying to quit restaurants. Like, after I graduated college, I was like, I'm not supposed to do this thing anymore.
And I quit you?
Yeah. Yes. And I'd like get a 9-to-5 job, and then I'd be working one night a week and then 2 nights a week, and then I'd go back to it, and then I'd get another 9-to-5 job. And I think for us, the important thing in kind of creating culture has been trying to create some of the benefits that you would see in a 9-to-5. And I think that's been a really important thing. And I think a lot of people are doing that. I don't think we're alone in that. But I think that is a really exciting part about where we're going as an industry and what a lot of people are doing. Because it can be a career. It doesn't have, I felt like I always was apologizing or making excuses for why I was there. And so creating a space where other people don't feel the same need to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think there used to be this thing where like only like the 3 Michelin starred restaurants were like career places for people front and back of the house. And I think that's definitely a culture has changed with that. And I think people are investing in training their employees front and back of house to change that culture, which is amazing.
We have career servers for sure. Like, we have some servers that are entering into their early 50s. This is what they do. They're very good at what they do. And they have found a home that they feel comfortable in. They know they're not leaving.
Yeah.
You know, and they will probably leave us at some point too.
Hopefully, I know, Steven, stop with that.
But hopefully they're going to retire.
Right.
You know, from serving, and Miller Union is the last stop. And I'm very proud of that, because what do they say about the Claremont Lounge in Atlanta? It's where strippers go to die. Miller Union's where servers go to die.
I don't think you want to
die. Like,
I'm just kidding. That's what, that was a really bad PR.
I'm dead. Yeah, Claremont Lounge is a very famous place.
Steven's PR manager is in the back of the room crying right now.
Damage control. Sorry, guys. No, but we have great servers that have, they're very well seasoned. They know their wines. They know how to take good care of people. And people, like,
your guests probably come back for those people
they
too.
Love them.
I mean, that's,
they
like
ask
Galatoire's.
For them by name.
Yeah.
I swear to God, they do. Yeah,
they're
it's
like,
great.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, that's what you want in a 10-year-old
totally.
Restaurant, and that's also what creates the culture for your guests too.
Exactly.
It's like your guests feel that love.
Yeah, they know Vince. They know Princeton. Yeah. You know, they know John. Like, they know all those people.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have anything you want to add?
No, I was going to kind of piggyback on what Jill said. You know, one of the lines I use with my cooks a lot is, you know, make me understand what you love and why you are here. Show me, like, through your actions and your words, you know, what motivates you? What inspires you to be doing this insanely difficult job that will never pay you as well as, you know, the lawyer that's working the same amount of hours that you are, that's making 100 times more than you ever will. Make me understand what you love. That's way, you know, everybody should live.
Yeah. Do what makes you happy, right? What about, what's your most frequent turnover position?
Dishwasher.
Right. Stevens.
As of late.
As of late.
We've been really, really lucky in our hosts. But everyone has kind of hit a new life milestone in the last like couple months, and almost our whole host team is turning over. And I'm really excited for everyone and what they're going on to do and the moves they're making. But so like right now it's hosts. We're like hiring like 5 new hosts, which is something we haven't done in a long time.
Yeah. Host. It's easy.
Yeah. Same restaurant.
Same restaurant.
Tell us the most exciting, I know hiring is hard, but the most exciting or best part of hiring.
I like getting people to talk about themselves and what they've accomplished, and you can learn so much about somebody in the first 5 minutes. You really can. I usually make up my mind within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So if you don't get to minute 6 with Steven,
then you know.
Like,
yeah.
But I also think that there are people that are good interviews and they don't perform well.
Yes.
And so it's the imperative part is getting them into the environment and seeing how they do in a trial. And that to me is the thing that tells.
Are there specific
everything.
Questions or things that you look for in those first 5 minutes that can tell you?
I like to ask why somebody left their previous jobs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then when I check references, I see if the stories add up.
Yeah.
A lot of times there's two sides to the story, and what the former employer says is different from the potential employee. But when they match up, even if it's negative and it's forgivable, then you can see that as a learning, like they learned something from that experience and they're freely talking about it.
How long do you do a trial for before you're like, okay, this is a good fit?
Usually just one shift.
Just one shift.
Unless it's a important position like a sous chef, that might be more like a week.
It's hard to find more than one day to have somebody coming and hanging out. True. Because when you have somebody staging, it's, you know, that's pretty much your entire day. You know, dedicated
your day off.
To that person,
and
or your day off.
And
most
that,
likely, they have another job, so they're coming on their day off. Yeah,
yeah. What you can expect.
I was going to say one of my favorite things about, you know, interviewing new people is, you know, you have to give a spiel about what you are and what you're doing, and every time you do that, it kind of forces you to reevaluate who you are and why you're there. And I think that, you know, every time I interview somebody, it kind of, you know, forces you to refocus on the things that, you know, the goal and the expectation that you're setting again. And I kind of really appreciate that opportunity to say the words out loud one more time, because just, you know, literally saying why you have this restaurant and what your aim is, helps
like
to just like remind. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. And I really enjoy that part of that process.
That's so important. I think that's something that we've sort of tried to refocus on as we've grown our team, and our team has, you know, some people have moved on for life changes and things, and we've hired new people on, is like, you have to remind them of where you started and why you started so that they understand your culture. And it's so true. It's like, you feel like, oh, people just know this, but no, they don't. You really do have to like always be talking about your culture and where you started and why you're doing what you're doing.
Right. I mean, that's like what I said at the beginning. Part of owning a restaurant or running your own business in general is you repeat yourself constantly.
Constantly. It's so true.
Whether you get tired of listening to yourself or not is a different story, but it is important to completely repeat everything all the time, and you can't not do it, or it starts to fade.
Yeah, it's the big, you forget what your whole purpose is.
All right, hardest part of hiring.
Sometimes you just make the wrong choice.
Yeah.
You know, it's like someone seems like a good fit in a stage, and then they get in there and they're not who they were when they tried out. I don't know. I think that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, the hardest part, though, is dealing with people that don't show up.
Like, I know.
You schedule an interview or a stage or both.
This is not dating on Tinder, people. They, do not ghost.
They don't.
So rude.
Or they'll reapply. I've had people not show up for interviews and 8 months later apply for a position again. Yes. Like, this name, I know this name. Yep, and I totally. Google my inbox and I'm like, you didn't show up for your interview.
It's so rude.
It's hard
rude.
To keep track of everybody. There's so many people that don't show. It's a running joke now. Like, you know, we'd start taking bets on if the stage will show or not. And I don't understand what's going on.
Don't say yes. You're wasting people's time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So here's what I do now.
Every restaurant industry in every city is very small. Everyone will know you. And
But this isn't just a restaurant industry problem. It happens in our business too. It's like people are supposed to come in for an interview and they just fucking no show on it.
So let me tell you what I start doing now. And I just to make sure that I wasn't dropping the ball.
Yeah.
After I schedule them, I send them a detailed email, confirmation email, with where to show up, where to park, if they're driving, what to wear, what to bring.
That's above and beyond.
I know.
Like the stages I did, I walked in like, scared that I was...
I do it now because I feel like after that call, if they aren't good at planning,
right,
they're not going to remember. I don't know. So then I'll say, this time is reserved specifically for you. If you cannot make it, please call us within 24 hours.
Yeah.
You should take a deposit.
I know,
right? $50 deposit if you don't show up.
You don't show up. You're wasting time. It's That's time true. You could be interviewing somebody who is a good fit for the position. That's, to me, why it's so infuriating, is because
it
I like
makes
set
you wait
time,
another week to find,
right, to find the right person.
The next candidate.
Yeah. So that's why it's like you're being unfair, not to the business, but to other candidates that could be like interviewing at that time.
And I appreciate when people show up early for an interview, but when they show up an hour early, that's a disruption.
My biggest pet peeve. When you show up 30, 45 minutes early for an interview, I'm just like, am I going to seat you in the dining room and let you sit there and watch me and awkwardly? Or
yeah.
So be
five
on
to 10
time,
early
5 to 10 minutes.
5 minutes
Don't
is
be late
fine.
Or you, yeah.
5 minutes is fine.
I like it. Okay. What's the most valuable quality you find in a candidate?
Enthusiasm.
Absolutely. 100%.
Intelligence.
Yeah.
Enthusiasm and intelligence. What do you think is the easiest quality you can teach?
Lot of teaching at the restaurant. Our third partner, Bill, is like, should have probably been a professor in another life. But he takes on wine stuff in such a huge way. I think anyone on our staff could probably, whether or not they believe it on the front of house side, go in and like be a somm at a lot of other restaurants. And so I think that is the thing that we spend the most time teaching and just, sorry, totally lost my train of thought where that was going, but.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So like wine.
No, that I see that at Miller Union as well. We spend a lot of time on wine education, and I see the most growth in our employees in that area because it's such a vast area that you can almost never stop learning. Mm-hmm. And I mean, same about food, but I think, you know, we have a developed style of food that once you kind of learn it, there's not a whole lot. I mean, I'm not going to recreate the wheel, you know,
but
with wine, there's so many things to learn. And I love learning peripherally from the front of the house and being around that without actually having to be tested on it.
I love it. You're like, haha, you guys have to be tested on it, but I don't. What is your biggest oh shit moment? This is the last one. And it can be oh shit, like that sucks that happened. Or it could be like, oh my God, I can't believe, like, oh shit, that just happened. It's so awesome.
When we hit 50 employees, we were like, oh shit.
In a good or bad way or both.
And we have people who rely on us.
Yeah.
And responsibility, and terrifying.
Yeah.
I think it's when we got to host former President Barack Obama. And
oh shit, that's amazing. Yeah. That is pretty huge.
Yeah. And his
wife. The first lady.
And the first lady. The first lady came in first. This is my favorite story.
Oh my God.
And then she came back with him for an early Father's Day dinner. And she walks in cool, calm, collected. She is everything you could imagine. And she just kind of hooks her thumb behind her and says, I brought a friend, and points to him.
Come
and the
on.
Entire staff was just...
You guys had no idea that he was going to be there?
And to have just, like, created some... Again, it's, like, something you can't even, like, really dream about. But still, and then it happens, and you're like, this is...
the whole place swarmed with Secret Service immediately?
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't, like, come in and do a sweep or anything before.
It was just... It was one of those moments you can't even, like, think to dream that it could happen, that just people you idolize. And there have been a lot of those kinds of moments with all sorts of different DC, people. But yeah, it's still. Just... It was... I don't know. One of the coolest moments I think I've had.
I think the biggest oh shit moment for us at Miller Union was when the fire alarm and sprinkler system went off for no reason on a Saturday night at 8:30.
Oh no!
Now the sprinkler didn't go on inside the restaurant. It was going off outside on the building, but the fire alarm was going off, and it's the most ear-pinching sound you could possibly hear.
And so repeatedly
over and over and over again. And we bought everybody's dinner because we felt so bad about it.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh shit, we're going to have to handle this.
I know. What did you do?
We bought everybody's dinner that was there and apologized because it was, they had to sit through 30 minutes of a fire alarm. It was That's unacceptable.
Brutal. Yeah.
And also beyond our control.
Yeah.
So right, we bit it on that one.
Yikes.
Cool. So one of the last things that we'd like to do is just to give out some shout outs to people that we know that are opening soon. So what do you got, Jen?
Well, first of all, we have some people in the room who are opening something sort of soon, or this year. That's soon enough.
Yeah, November. So it's soon enough.
November Revelers Hour will be coming.
We hope November.
We hope.
DC. Right, DC. Right across from the Line Hotel. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to be in DC later this winter, please check them out. We just had lunch with our friend Michael, who owns Coquette from New Orleans, and they are opening Thalia, which is their second restaurant in Irish Channel. Should be opening, he says, hopefully before July 4th. So go see him and Kristen if you're in New Orleans.
And I think they're splitting it up. He's going to hold down Coquette, and she's gonna.
All right, so go see Kristen. Go see them both. Yeah, go to Coquette, and also go to Thalia. They're delicious. Yeah. Super talented people, so definitely go support them. Fat Radish, who are friends on Orchard Street, just opened in Savannah.
Saw that. That's their second on MLK. Restaurant on MLK. Yeah, that's my hometown.
Oh, you're from Savannah?
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't know that. So go see them if you're in the Savannah area. And then our friends from Submarine Hospitality have opened Sequoia in Portland. So that's Joshua McFadden from Ava Jeans and Tusk, his fourth restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And we also just had lunch with our pals from Long Oven, who opened last year.
Yep, they're
Richmond, Virginia.
They're just about hitting a year. Yeah.
Yes, they're fantastic. Cool. And we all cooked at the Beard House together last night.
They did. That's why we have our first out-of-town guests. We're so happy you're here. So if you're cooking at the Beard House, hit Alex and I up to come on the show, too. That's a tip.
Yes.
Also, I just realized that people are going to come into Miller Unit and pull the fire alarm to try to get a free dinner.
Don't do that. Don't do that to Stephen or other guests.
Okay, so that's it for today. But next week, tune in as we chat all things expediting, permitting, and liquor licenses. So that should be super exciting. We've got Robert Bookman, Esquire, and he's one of the one of New York City's top authorities on the regulatory agencies that oversee the hospitality industry. So there should be a whole lot to learn from him. If you have questions for him specifically, I'm sure he can answer on your market if you're not in New York as well. Special thanks again, Stephen, John, and Jill for being here. If your line cook stole your Sharpie and notepad, we've got your back. You can check our blog on tillitnyc.com to catch a wrap-up of key points from today. Can you guys tell everywhere to find you on the social?
At Miller Union ATL, at Miller Union Chef.
At Tail Up Goat.
I'm glad Jill's here because I actually didn't know the answer to that. That's great.
I love it.
And follow us and the journey on Heritage Radio. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere else you get your podcast. And don't forget to follow on Instagram at We Are Opening Soon and at Till at NYC. And that's it. We're out.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, so guys. Much fun having you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.